What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the Xbox 2 podcast, where you can pay $10 in microtransactions to skip the beginning and get to the good stuff. You want to avoid the grind, right? What's going on, everybody? I'm one of your hosts, Randall419, man with the million gamer score. I get that quite a bit. My videos have been getting a lot of traction lately, and people are like, million what? Million gamer score. I have that. So I, you know, someone said, hey, man with the million, and I used it. So I'm one of your hosts, and with me as always, my buddy from Windows Central, dropping knowledge every week, Jez Corden. What's going on, buddy?
Man, you just made me realize I don't even have 100,000 games career.
You haven't. I think you told me at one point you didn't even have a completed game on Xbox.
Yeah, my closest is Mass Effect 1. I only need the achievement for Insane Difficulty. And I was doing that, but then I got stuck on that, I can't remember the name, Metro Albanesia, and I just thought, nah.
But with close to 100,000 gamer score, and you know, you've been on Xbox for quite some time, right? How do you not have a single completion, or as they say in trophy or PlayStation land, a single platinum trophy? How are you able to go through?
Don't bother. I never ever look at the achievements list.
I always look at the achievement list. It's just like a habit I got into. Like, achievement list pops up, look at it, plan my attack. That's how I was able to get so much gamer score and such, you know. Well, now gamer score doesn't mean jack shit because they're basically selling games that are 10 minutes long and get 1,000 gamer score. But when it was a lot harder, when games were more expensive, when, you know,
I got bad news for you, man. Gamer score never.
Don't do that to me. Don't say that.
I got achievement points in WoW, actually. I've got 12,000 achievement points in WoW. So
no, you're right. Gamer score never really meant anything other than like, hey, this person plays a lot of video games, right?
Just a bit of fun, right?
But at the same time, it was a lot harder back on the 360 than it was right now, because right now all games give you 1,000 gamer score, and there are games that you can play for 10 minutes and get all of them.
You know what would be cool? Some kind of career mode where it, you know, cataloged accomplishments beyond achievements. That'd be cool.
If only Microsoft was planning and had something in development like that, you know? But they're smart people at Microsoft. I'm sure they thought of that, and it probably just didn't fit whatever new goals they were setting their eyes on. You know, the race to 2 billion gamers, right? Isn't that the whole kind of thing now? Gopher says, what did Gopher just say? How about the Black Ops achievement list? I have not seen the Black Ops achievement list. I'm assuming it's probably all zombie achievements, which probably means not a lot for the Blackout and the other thing. But we have a great show lined up, as we always do. We're going to be talking about Xbox versus Google.
Yes.
Jez wrote an article today in Windows Central. I did a video about it. We're going to go a little bit more in depth because I'm still not really convinced Google's that much of a threat. And here's Phil calling right now to tell me I'm wrong. The grand, they got a ton of money. they're a huge threat. But we're going to talk about that. Not only a threat to Xbox, but a threat to all companies. Also, there's this interesting thing with Crackdown. I don't really like talking about Crackdown that much because I just want the game to come out at this point. But Phil talked about Crackdown, and some of the responses to what he said were truly head-scratching.
And took a whack on it.
Yeah, it's weird, like, to see a narrative, like, we'll talk about it more, but it made me pause and seriously consider for a moment the age-old question: media bias.
We need a sound effect for the thing.
Yeah, like that. Media bias. Right. We're also going to talk about Assassin's Creed Odyssey a little bit more in detail. Obviously, we're going to give our thoughts on it. I'm about 7 hours in. Jez is a lot longer, but the main topic of discussion is going to be a good one, and it's going to be about, and Gopher is going to hate this, my buddy Gopher, because he loves everything Ubisoft does, right? He's like, he's basically a cuck for Ubisoft. But
even the crew?
Oh, he loves the crew. He hates racing games, but loves the crew, mainly because Ubisoft made it. But we're going to talk about the fact that apparently the grind is so real in that game that, but that's okay because Ubisoft lets you buy microtransactions to give you more XP so you don't have to grind. We're going to talk about the, you know, the financial decision behind that and maybe the ethics behind a decision like that. And also, whatever else we want to talk about, chat is open. You got any interesting comments and questions, put them in there. You want to get your topic read right away or whatever, super chat is always open. Thank you guys for the support. Thanks for being here. We got 212 watching already. And I'm going to shill a little bit. Why don't you all just hit that like button real fast? Give us a like. Thank you. But how you doing, Jez? It was good last week?
God, we're preparing for Christmas right now, and I'm already sick of it. So yeah, that's how I'm doing. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I know my note when I talk to Gopher later, he's gonna be so pissed at me. He's gonna be like, "You called me a cuck in front of everybody."
God, that word is an interesting word.
I'd be like, "That's right, Gopher. You're a snowflake." Oni hates that term too. Yeah,
snowflake cook.
That's right. So yeah, so like we'll get right into the Assassin's Creed stuff and then we'll talk about the microtransactions. So I want to talk about the actual game first before we get into the bigger problem or the bigger issue with the game. You really couldn't really talk much about it last time, but you know, really quickly, pretty much say like what do you think about the game. Do you liking it? You enjoying it? Is it not that good?
I love it. I gave it 8 out of 10 because I thought some of the systems were tacked on. That mercenary system is just a shallow ripoff of Shadow of War stuff. They could have done so much more with that. The whole mercenary system as pertains to naval combat, they could have done way more with that. The narrative dialogue choices weren't that good either. A lot of them didn't matter. And also, a lot of some of them just create inconsistencies in his personality, which bugged me too. But it's the first time they've tried doing something like that, so I cut him a bit of slack. But overall, addictive combat, massive open world, lots of stuff to do. The side quests aren't lame. Interesting stuff. Story's quite good overall, and it's just massive and beautiful and gorgeous. It's hard to like really be like, "Oh, this game sucks," when it just plainly doesn't. So I gave it 8 out of 10 mainly because I felt those systems could have been better. But overall, yeah, I really love it. I'm pretty addicted to it. I'm even like started looking up what ancient Greek history documentaries I can watch because it's so interesting.
And I mean, Greek mythology is insanely cool, and that was one of the reasons why I was interested in this one over, say, Assassin's Creed Origins. Like, I have Origins. I actually bought it day one. I played it for like an hour, and I was like, and then it came out like the same time as Wolfenstein 2, and I'm all about Wolfenstein, so I played Wolfenstein instead. But I don't know, I really wasn't into the setting for Assassin's Creed Origins. I know people are like, "What do you mean ancient Egypt's really cool?" And I'm just like, I've never been that much of a history buff about ancient Egypt. However, my favorite time period in like for, you know, mythology and things like that is I love the Greek setting. I love all the mythology that comes out of that. So like when they announced, King Leonidas of 300 and all these different mythology things and like, you know, Medusa and stuff, I'm like, this seems pretty cool. I'm just not sure if I'm going to like the change. But from what I played of it, and I'm only like 5 or 6 hours into it, I'm level 7, which, what level are you? What level have you gotten to?
30-something.
30-something. So you put in time, because leveling up in this game is slow. Yeah. It's not fast.
Around 50 hours or more, I think.
50 hours. See, you're farther than Gopher. See, Gopher loves this game, and he's been playing it quite a bit, but you're farther than him, so it's going to be interesting to see how Gopher...
I had a weak head start on him, so there is that. I had a review copy.
Maybe you did, but...
Okay. Well, yeah, you know, I do enjoy it, and I played it hardcore the whole week, in around my other jobs and stuff like that. But it's good, man. I can't fault it too much. I just wish that the extra features were a bit more fleshed out, and
Yeah.
hopefully, because that's one of the things I said to someone when I was, because I've been streaming the game too a bit,
With
on
Roby on
Mixer.
the morning mixer, shout out.
Yeah, that's right. I've been sort of like, it was, people ask about the game, and the main way I think of Ubisoft games these days is that they're really great at sort of churning out these really detailed open worlds that look detailed, but they suck at gameplay and narrative detail. Like, I can never really remember Assassin's Creed villains because it feels like they're afraid of making truly controversial, compelling villains that are truly hateable. All their villains are sort of like soft,
The
you
only
know.
villains in Ubisoft history that stand out are the Far Cry ones, because like
Yeah,
the
and
series
a
is
lot of
centered
those
around
are.
that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they've got Far Cry, and I was with especially Far Cry 5, which had pretty great villains. I felt like it might be, it might mark a turning point, but no, Assassin's Creed Odyssey has completely memorable villains, and I feel like I can say that about every single Assassin's Creed game I've ever played. Like, and I think part of the problem is the format of the games, because you go through the game assassinating all the villains before they get enough build up, I guess. But like, they don't really introduce a central antagonist until like 15 or more hours in. I think even Polygon wrote an article
Well,
about it.
that's what I've seen people say, is that the game doesn't get going until 15 hours in, right?
Yeah, I personally I didn't mind that because to start with, I thought they were going for like. Because, I mean, without spoiling much of the plot, you basically play as a mercenary. And at the start of the game, it feels like you're trying to build up your mercenary company. So I thought, okay, I see where they're going with this. You're going to build up a mercenary company, and then people are going to come after you, and you're going to be like getting up entangled in all these world events and stuff like that. And I really started thinking of it like, man, it almost feels like, I don't know if you've seen the Berserk anime, but that's all about like mercenary companies as well and rivalries and stuff like that. I really thought that might have been where they were going, and I was like, oh, this seems really cool. But then no, it's sort of about 15 hours in, you get access to a Ubisoft style web of
Oh
conspirators
no,
that you
don't
have
say that. Don't say
to.
that.
So I'm sorry, but that's the same as Far Cry, same as Assassin's Creed and probably other games. You get access to a web of conspirators that you have to kill in succession. You don't actually have to do that to complete the game, I don't think. There's another web, in addition to that web of conspirators, there's another web of conspirators that you have to kill in order to really truly complete the game. And they're not, a lot of those conspirators are sort of low level conspirators, and you uncover the clues as to their whereabouts as you play, doing side quests and other things, and there's like this whole menu which tells you there might be a clue in this con in this not country, in this sort of region, in this in like an abandoned silver mine. So like you have to explore around and find that stuff. And so you do all that stuff, but again, it's like there's no, even now at the point of the game that I'm in, there's nobody that I really hate in the game. The two evil interesting characters that were potentially interesting and evil were killed off really near the start. And it was like, oh, okay. So,
Spoilers, Jez. Now I'm gonna know they're gonna die.
well, I'm talking about you've already killed one. You've done
Oh,
the other.
yeah, that's true, yeah.
So like, I mean, that's not really a spoiler because I'm talking like the first 5 hours of the game.
Well, yeah, I thought it was. I thought, there was one moment that I did laugh pretty good.
Oh, some of the dialogue's hilarious.
So some of the things I like, there's some of the changes, because keep in mind, I haven't played an Assassin's Creed game since Unity, right? Which, comp and I loved Assassin's Creed at one point. Like, I'm talking, I got all the achievements for Assassin's Creed 2, Assassin's Creed 3, Revelations, Brotherhood, Unity. Like, I was a big Assassin's Creed fan, and then I played Unity, and it was so god awful, so horrible in every way imaginable, that it threw me off the series. I didn't play Syndicate. I've only played an hour of Origins, but I was just like, I'm not really interested right now. So I'm like, here I am coming back to, you know, Assassin's Creed again. And I'm like, I'm kind of digging the changes. Like, I'm digging, like, the conversation options, like the choices.
Yeah, they're a bit soft, but it's still nice.
Right. But I like, because it reminds me a lot of, like Mass Effect, where, like, you pick an option, but, like, you don't really say what's on screen. So it's more like you're, like, sitting there and just listening to them. And I really enjoyed that about Mass Effect, where it was, like, you chose Paragon or the other one. But, like, what you said wasn't what was displayed. So, like, you still had to pay attention to what was going on. And I really enjoyed that. So I really like that new change. The combat is obviously, I think, better than it was previously. But, of course, I'm still going around assassinating everybody. I do find it weird that you can assassinate somebody, but if you're not high enough, your assassin skill's not high enough, that you won't kill them.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird.
Well, that's another thing. Like, get your gear and equipment is really important. And the way, if you want that playstyle, you have to pay really close attention to the stats on your gear in a way that you often don't in Assassin's Creed. Like, the gear is there, but it's just to make you feel rewarded. But in Odyssey, it actually matters, and it's nice that it matters, because, like, when you get towards the end game, or, well, if you can call it an end game, when you get further through the game, you end up with, like, lots of different gear options, and a lot of them have assassin damage on, hunter damage, or whatever. If you do make a spec that is focused on assassination, you will always land those assassinations, and you can make it feel like the classic Assassin's Creed games. But you have to get the gear. You have to pay attention to what you're equipping, and you have to, you know, upgrade them appropriately to get there. I like that personally. Some people don't, but I thought it made the gameplay a lot more interesting as pertains to loot, as pertains to exploration. You want your exploration to matter, right?
Yeah, well, some of the loot looks really good. Like, your character
Armor stuff looks great.
Yeah, the armor stuff really stands out, and the game itself is gorgeous. I'm playing on the Xbox One X, and it's a truly stunning game. Like, I was up on, like, a cliff and, like, kind of panning around and looking out at daytime, and I was just like, man, this game is absolutely gorgeous. So I'm enjoying it. Obviously, you know, I haven't got that far. But I wanted to talk about this microtransaction stuff, because in my opinion, it's a little bit shady, and I know you agree with me on this. So
a lot shady.
I think you ran into this problem, but at some point in the game, you will be forced to grind, right? And the way the game is if you're one level below an enemy, maybe two levels below an enemy, they are OP as hell. Good luck trying to kill them, right? You pretty much have to be on level with them to stand a chance. But there becomes a point later on in the game where you have to, like, level up your character to meet the story requirements or for the recommended level for the story mission, right? So which will have you traveling and doing all the side content the game offers, which the reviews do say if you're doing everything as you go, like clearing out everything on an island and doing everything as you play, then you'll probably be fine. But it's essentially padding out, you know, like, not everybody wants to do everything, right? Some people just want to be in for a great story, just plow through the main missions and, you know, see how everything goes. And this was also in Assassin's Creed Origins. People had to do the same thing. But there is a way where you can bypass the grind, because in the menus of Assassin's Creed Odyssey, there is this, you can buy Helix points, and Helix points you can spend on getting armor, buying time savers, as they call them. That's exactly what they're called in this one. Time savers, right? What Ubisoft and what Capcom said, or player choice. Hey, this is for the player that maybe doesn't have a lot of time, or, you know, like, has more money than sense, right? So for $10, you can get an upgrade that gives you...
Well, it's not exactly $10, because it costs 1,200 Helix points, I believe.
No, so I looked at it. I looked at it last night. It's 1,000 Helix points, and for $10, you can buy 1,050. So
I got it the wrong way around.
So for $10, there is one that's 1,500, which gives you extra gold and extra XP, which would be more expensive. But so this upgrade will give you a permanent 50% extra XP boost on all your save files, right? So when you complete story missions and it gives you 3,000 XP normally, well, that's going to give you an extra 1,500. So now you're getting 4,500. So just imagine if you bought this from the very beginning, or when you're grinding to get to the point where, you know, you need to get that level and you bought this $10. Well, now the grind doesn't seem that bad because you bought this thing. And they also have the same thing for the money. You want to earn extra 50% drachme, you know, drachme. You want to get the extra gold and stuff. You can buy, you can spend your Helix points on materials to upgrade your boats, on weapons and things like that. So in my opinion, this is pretty shady. I'm going to lie.
I agree. It's pretty shady. And, you know, the point I'm at in the game, and I, again, I'm someone who does go around trying to clear out places. So I didn't run into the issues that much with the level, you know, feeling like I need to go back and grind and all that stuff. That said, I did definitely run into situations where it was like, okay, these dudes are too hard for me to kill with my current gear. My gear was like really out of date and I wanted to upgrade it, but I didn't have enough materials, and they sell materials for real money. So I either had a choice of going and do a ton of busy work. And as someone who's pressed for time a lot of the time, that is something that I have to think about. Or I could have bought the materials outright on their real money store, which is really annoying. I do feel like it's going to get worse as well towards the end of the game, because for reasons I can't spoil, you do end up having to kill some pretty powerful dudes. And I think for a lot of people, grinding up there is just going to be annoying. And it feels like, well, they've almost designed it this way. I mean, if the microtransactions and stuff weren't there, you wouldn't even think that, because take Final Fantasy VII, for example. You could get Knights of the Round, which is the best summon in the game. But in order to get that, you have to get a gold chocobo, which is like an insane amount of grinding, or at least I thought it was an insane amount of grinding. I would never have bothered doing that.
But you However, don't need it to beat the game, though.
Exactly. You don't need it to beat the game. But like, if I wanted to get that, it'd be a certain amount of grinding. But it doesn't bother me because there's no way to get it with real life money. I mean, you could buy like an exploder cheat cartridge. Not that I would ever do such a thing, but yeah, it was back in the day. It was like, if you wanted to time save, you could just put a cheat code in. But nowadays, if you want to time save, you have to give them extra money, which just feels so scummy.
Right. And this is something we talked about last week with the Capcom offering red orbs to upgrade your characters for real money, right? We talked about this, and the slippery slope is exactly what is in Assassin's Creed Odyssey and what some people said was in Shadow of War, that the idea that they artificially lengthen the grind so that you might consider buying a microtransaction to overcome that. Now, will this be a factor for me? No, because the way I play open world games is I do everything before I move on. Like, I've done everything on these first two islands, right? I'm level 7. So, and that's how I play all my open world games. So presumably, if I keep on doing how I play like I always do, then I won't really run into the issue.
The issue you'll run into the same issue that I ran into, where I didn't have enough materials. You'll get to a point where it's like, oh, I don't have enough leather to upgrade my ship. I need to go and grind goats for half an hour, you know, or I don't have enough metal to upgrade my weapons, and now I'm too weak to kill this boss, you know. Even if you do all that stuff, you're gated by the material system then to a degree. And like, I've gotten to a point now where my character can basically AoE a herd of goats with one hit. So when I'm like running around, my character's also basically causing goat genocide by just spraying arrows all over the place and then stripping them of their flesh in order to upgrade my loincloth, you know. So it's a bit weird thinking about it. Like it's kind of funny actually, because like there's lines in the game, right? And I know there's no lines in modern Greece. And I was like, well, they must have hunted them all to extinction. And this is exactly what you do in the game. You go running around hunting all these animals to extinction.
You hate goats. Like, you hate goats, I can tell in your voice.
Do I? Well, I don't know. The game gives me no choice but to hate goats. It doesn't matter. If you're a goat lover, you have no choice but to murder these goats for their delicious leather in order to upgrade your stuff. So,
right.
You know, it is a grindy game. And, you know,
it's a long life, game, too.
It's a long game. And grinding ain't always a bad thing. Sometimes, you know, I enjoy games where, you know, I can just zone out and grind. And that's why sometimes I enjoy playing Minecraft. Sometimes I enjoy playing Elite Dangerous. Sometimes I enjoy playing No Man's Sky, and it's, you know, mindless grinding isn't always a bad thing. When the issue arises is, are they exploiting people by, you know, forcing them to grind? And I think the reason Shadow of War didn't get away with it to the same degree was because Shadow of War just wasn't that fun. I'm sorry, just wasn't that fun.
Well, Shadow of War also pulled the switcheroo where, like, less than a year later, they're like, oh, we're removing everything because, you know, sales were down. Nobody was buying the game. Not many people were playing it. And they thought they could be like, well, we're removing all the stuff people had problems with, and maybe we'll get a second wind in sales and people playing the game, you know? Whereas, like, this has been a part of Assassin's Creed for some time. Like, not this grindy aspect, but the Time Savers Pack. The Time Savers Pack has been in, like, all the Assassin's Creed, basically. And I don't know, like, I do find it weird where you build a game and grinding's a part of it, but then you offer people a way to avoid the grind. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know, I'm enjoying the game so far. Like, I think it's really good. You know, I'm like 6 hours in, but I know in the back of my mind, there's going to be like, Rand, you know, will you be tempted to buy the 10, you know, because it's not expensive. It's $10, 50% extra XP. You know, and like, will you be tempted to buy this? Which, you know, I'm not currently. It's just that, I don't know, like, we've seen where microtransactions have taken games like NBA 2K and Madden and FIFA. We've seen the end game, you know, if you allow these type of things to be a part of a game, so they can ruin a game for a lot of people. And I don't want to see it ruin another franchise. Sure. Like, you could obviously work your way around it in Assassin's Creed and Shadow of War, you know, but will that take, you know, be more prominent in other type of games? That's the issue that I'm more concerned with. You know what I mean? Like, I find it a little bit shady. I find it a little bit unethical as well. Like, artificially making something harder to kind of entice people to spend $10, you know, to avoid that stuff. Yeah. I don't know. And I know people say you don't have to buy any of the stuff. You can just play the missions like normal. And yeah, that's how they can get around it, because like exactly that defense, you don't have to buy it. But my point is, what if people, so many people do, and then eventually it's not a choice, you know, eventually it's like almost a requirement, just how it is in like, you know, the Madden Ultimate Team, the FIFA Ultimate Team, and like NBA 2K and stuff. That's the problem that I see, and I don't want to happen. You know? But
it's a slippery slope, man. It is a slippery slope. And, you know, the thing is about Ubisoft especially, a lot of people work on those games. A hell of a lot of people. They've got a lot of overhead in those games, as in, you know, costs associated with developing them. You could argue maybe the game doesn't need to be as big as it is. The game doesn't need as much art or assets as it does. Like, I'm shocked, right, at how few times I've encountered the same armor set twice recolored. There is so many unique armor sets in this game. Like, when you're playing World of Warcraft, for example, leveling up and questing and stuff, you'll see the same armor set over and over again, just color swapped. I've seen very little of that in Assassin's Creed Odyssey and Origins, I guess. Like, there's a lot of art assets and a lot of overhead here. They've got to recoup those costs, you know. But they're not a charity. They've got to grow their business. They've got
It is a business after all. And if you've ever finished the Ubisoft game, you sure as hell know it, because those credits are 40 minutes long, right? And a lot of people worked on these games, but we're going to be switching topics, but first, I want to shout out Eternal Shaddai for the super chat. And this is going to be an interesting kind of a question and answer thing here, Jez. He says, question for you guys. What kind of player are you? Speedrunner, explorer, or online multiplayer? Mm-hmm. For me, I'll go first. I definitely ain't no speedrunner, right? I'm not looking towards finishing a game I've been looking forward to as fast as possible. I have done achievements that require you to beat a game in a certain amount of time. I've done that, right? But I wouldn't classify myself as speedrunner. Now, I guess you could say I'm an explorer and an online multiplayer person. I mean, hell, I have 700 hours in PUBG. I played Halo 2 every day for a single year. I played Halo 3 for 500 hours. You know, I played Overwatch for over 100 hours. I do enjoy playing online multiplayer. And I'll probably play Blackout for Call of Duty Black Ops 4 for a little bit. I played Halo 5 for 200 hours. So, I mean, I do enjoy my multiplayer with my friends. So, yeah, I guess I am an online multiplayer person. But I do explore. Like, in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I explored every inch of these last two islands and did everything. Like, in Spider-Man, I would swing around the city and do everything in an area before moving on to the next. I did the same way with God of War. When presented, same thing in Tomb Raider. Like, I like to explore the surroundings before I move on. So that's me. What about you? What about you, Jez?
Depends on the context, I think. Like, my gaming habits have changed so much over the years. And I suppose it's partially due to being strapped for time. Like, when I'm reviewing a game, I often feel myself pulled between, okay, I've got to get to the meat of the game, the things that people are most interested about. But naturally, at heart, I am an explorer too. Like, I did when I was reviewing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I did the first couple of islands, the first couple of areas to completion. But then it was like deadline looming, and I was like, oh, okay, I better speed up a bit now. So depending on the context of what I'm doing, it does change. But I think when I game for fun, which is increasingly less these days, I do prefer to explore, especially in games like Odyssey, which have so much stuff off the beaten track and Rand, a lot of that. That's another thing about Odyssey. There's two different modes you can play it in. You can play it in guided mode, which basically gives you quest markers telling you where to go. And there's also explorer mode, which tells you stuff like, this quest is east of this town. Then you have to go and sort of find it yourself with your eagle and stuff, which encourages you a bit more to actually explore the game world. And there's a lot of stuff that isn't marked on the map in Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Like, there's major locations, like a question mark, but as you run around, there's just loads of little details hidden around that aren't even on the map. And it's really great to see a game take exploration to heart like that. So
I noticed that as well. Yeah.
I like Run too. I love online games too. You know, I'm addicted to Overwatch again a bit. I play a lot of World of Warcraft, which is an online game. Human players just add a sense of dynamism that AI just can't get to yet.
And I know you can't wait to dive in and explore the world that Rockstar created in Red Dead 2.
I am so ready for Red Dead 2.
Yeah, a lot of people. You know, it's funny. It's like, I saw some people saying Assassin's Creed Odyssey, too much stuff to do. Gamers not going to buy it. And they're like, look at all the stuff we have in Red Dead Redemption 2. And gamers are like, totally buying it, right?
Yeah. I mean, do you think Red Dead's going to be any less grindy?
I mean, I'm sure.
Well, it doesn't have a leveling system, so I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, if somebody just wants to experience the story in Red Dead, they'd probably be able to. Like,
yeah, I suppose that's the thing about Odyssey. It's not truly open world because you are gated. Like, all mobs level up with you.
That's right.
Which keeps the challenge consistent. But there are areas that are just too high level for you, and you go there and it'll be a skull, and they'd be like, oh, that's for playing later, you know? But yeah.
That's for later. All right.
Later.
So thanks for the super chat. Thanks for the topic, Eternal Shaddai. Really appreciate it. Moving on. I'm going to talk about Crackdown 3 here for a minute. God, I really hate talking about this game. Oh, hold on. Someone's at the door. I'll be right back, Jez. Keep the
people. Oh, no, don't do this to me. I haven't got the chart. Man, ignore the door. Just ignore it. Oh, my God. Right. Guys, bear with me. Rand's ditched me. Means I've got to pull up the chat on my phone. Bear with me. One moment. Ugh. Sorry about this, guys. This happens when we're doing a live show. And if we were a professional, we would probably edit this down when we upload it. But we're not professional by any stretch of the imagination. Right, I can see chat now. So if you've got any questions, I love it when Jez is by himself. I don't like it. Jez, why do you hate Google? Oh, the reasons are numerous and vast, far too many to name for this podcast. But honestly, I don't hate Google, but I just write about Microsoft and I write in the context of what Microsoft should do. I don't care about Google, is a better way of putting it. I don't like Google because they harvest user data with impunity. I don't like Google because they sell data which can be manipulated and abused to manipulate people. I prefer companies that sell products. And Microsoft is a company that sells products. I even prefer Apple on that basis. That's why I said it. I'd rather Apple than Google.
I've turned into a Jez hates Google segment, huh?
Yeah, someone asked me why I hate Google. I wish you wouldn't leave me alone like that.
I'm sorry.
I can't handle it.
Right. We'll talk about why Jez hates Google a little bit more during the Xbox versus Google segment. But Crackdown 3. Look, I don't like talking about it. We've talked about it quite a bit. It's the game that I don't know. It's like, what did you say, the redheaded stepchild of the Xbox first party games? The black sheep?
It's becoming that.
Right.
But I don't know what else it could be at this point, sadly.
But there was actually good news about Crackdown 3. Phil, Mr. Phil Spencer, head of Xbox, tweeted out that he had played a build yesterday. And he said that, I was playing a full build yesterday. Nice work by the team. More work to do, but good progress. My agent felt like the wrecking machine I enjoy, smiley face. And then over the weekend, I was playing with Phil in Forza Horizon 4, and he mentioned that he had played it again, and he feels good about the game. His agents feel good. Okay, I mean, that's all great news. Like, Phil delayed the game because he said it didn't feel right. He said his agent didn't feel right, right? But, you know, people have this agenda. You know, people on Twitter, fanboys, on both sides, they always have an agenda to twist things and turn things into their own talking points. But also websites as well. Because GameSpot put up an article detailing what Phil said, and then was like, Crackdown 3 canceled? Basically talking about, like, and it wasn't just, like, GameSpot. It was, like, another website. And it's like, I don't understand how you could read his quote, and the takeaway from that quote is Crackdown 3 might get canceled.
I didn't say that. That's crazy.
You know what I mean? Like, how do you, like, sure, okay, the game still needs work. Yeah, I mean, the game, it's not coming out till February. So, of course, there's more work to do. It's not gone gold yet. But, like, how do you read that and your takeaway? Isn't that like, hey, the game seems better. Phil's, you know, impressed with how his agent feels, which was the reason he delayed it in the first place. And you're like, Crackdown 3 going to get canceled? Question mark. Look, if Crackdown 3 was going to get canceled, it would have already been canceled. Okay? This is another thing people don't understand. Like, people say, oh, they should just cancel Crackdown 3 or what have you. Like, if they were going to do that, the game would have been canceled years ago. But they're not going to, you know? There's so many different things that impacted what Crackdown 3 happened. I mean, for starters, like, CloudGen being bought out on Epic, Epic bought like the developer behind the tech behind like all that stuff with the cloud destruction. I bet you that had a big problem with it or a big issue with it, right? Yep. I don't know, man. Like, sure, Microsoft, of course, deserves a lot of the criticism for announcing this game in 2014 and not delivering it until 2019. You know, that you can criticize that for all they want, but the game's going to be finished. And I just kind of look at some of these takes and I just don't get it. I mean, I get it from the sense that GameSpot is clearly looking for clicks, and an article about games, you know, the game being canceled, it is going to obviously draw more eyes on it.
My article about Crackdown being delayed is one of my best articles of the year, and my best article last year was Scalebound getting canceled. People love negative news, man. They love it.
They do. Negative news thrives. Like, negative videos thrive on YouTube. Like, I don't know. People want to hear about, I don't know, people don't want to hear about positivity and good things. They for some reason, like, the negativity mob, I don't know, it draws attention and clicks, and the algorithm feeds into that, so more people do it, and it just seems like an overwhelming thing.
Yeah, and I feed into it as well. You know, it's hard to escape. Like, I saw there was this article this week about a new article about how video games cause violence, and I was just like, oh god, and I just couldn't resist retweeting it, calling it stupid, you know, showing my outrage. I couldn't resist, man.
Dude.
I couldn't resist.
And one of the games they mentioned in that thing was freaking Manhunt. Manhunt.
Oh, I love that. I love that part of the story.
And then, you know what?
How old is that game?
That game's like, was on the Wii, dude. No, that game was on the PS2, I think. Manhunt's old. It was a Rockstar game. And I remember people flipping out about that game when it first came out, but nobody's playing Manhunt now. How the hell do you include that in a video game as violent thing? Jesus Christ.
How do you even measure who plays Manhunt in 2018?
Nobody plays Manhunt in 2018. That dude probably just Googled some article and saw some parents groups were upset about Manhunt and were like, yep.
No, man, I think Manhunt 2 was the last game to be banned in the UK, I think.
And I liked Manhunt. I played Manhunt. I think it's a little bit overrated, but like, I don't know. It's
a ridiculous game, but it's not bad.
Right.
Quite fun.
But as the developer pertains for Crackdown, like, look, the game's going to come out. Will it be good? I hope so. I really, really hope so. I hope the game is good. I hope the game's a lot of fun. I hope the multiplayer works. Like, they said the multiplayer was going to work. And I fully expect it to be shown off at XO18. Like, I 100% expect that game to get its, like, re-reveal or whatever you want to call it at XO18.
I've heard that the cloud destruction stuff is still in. I keep hearing that. So, like, even though Cloud Giant, or however you say it, even though their departure created disruption in the development process, apparently the cloud destruction is still there. So we should see some of that at XO 2018.
I mean, they have to show it at XO 18. It's like,
they will.
Yeah, I'm expect 100%. Like, I will eventually do an XO prediction show, and I'll probably even do a video about it. But I 100% fully expect Crackdown 3 to be shown off at XO 18. No ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yeah, I can pretty much confirm it anyway.
Yeah. So just always keep in mind, you know, with some of these people that report news, like if you're just reporting the news, like, hey, name changes are coming to PlayStation. Great. Like, that's awesome. I want to read more about it. But then, like, people will twist that. Oh, PlayStation, you know, like, and I don't know. Does Crackdown?
I'm not going to go too in depth on this, but the way news is handled often on gaming sites these days, it's often handled by freelancers that don't have to be paid as much. They don't have to be included in, like, you know, employee benefits and stuff like that. And also there's like tax benefits to having freelancers instead of having a proper employee and stuff like that. So, and news about things like that doesn't often make much money. So it's often better, and I'm not saying this is what GameSpot have done here, because I don't know who wrote that article, but it's often the case that it's better financially to use a freelancer. And it's also often the case that freelancers get things wrong a lot. You know, they misread things. There's just the quality takes a hit. That's because news isn't profitable a lot of the time. You know, ad revenues are down for all sites, as far as I'm aware. And companies, a lot of these media companies are looking for alternative sources of revenue. You know, and that's why you see on Windows Central that there's a lot of, you know, stuff there about, you know, best laptop bags and stuff like that. It's because at the end of the day, you know, it makes money, you know. So the industry, the idea of getting stuff for free leads to decreased quality, mm-hmm. I think. And it's a shame, but that's the way it is, you know. I mean, we're doing this podcast for free because we love the industry, right? But yeah. Like, I couldn't pay the bills. I couldn't put food on my table by podcasting.
No.
Do it because you have to love it. You do it because you love it, you know.
That's the same thing with YouTube. I really enjoy doing YouTube, making videos and stuff, you know. Anyways, I wanted to ask you and everybody in chat, what made gaming great for you this year, right?
I saw your positive video about PlayStation.
Right, I know. And
I really liked that video. I didn't watch it. I just liked the talk.
Right, so I have people calling me a pony now on the PlayStation. Okay.
Oh, no, Ron's a pony.
I know, right? But look, the video was just about my appreciation for Sony making three of my favorite games of the year, right? That's it. This isn't an Xbox versus PlayStation thing. It's just I enjoyed three of their games so much that if you take away those three games, this year doesn't look very good. But I understand it's just my personal opinion on the matter. So I wanted to ask you, Jez, what made gaming great for you this year? Who made gaming great for you? And everybody in chat, let me know what game, what publisher, who made gaming great for you? And it could be anything. If you want it to be Sea of Thieves, I'm not going to argue. You want it to be State of Decay? You want it to be some stupid Nintendo game? Go right ahead. And you just see, I just trolled Nintendo there. But either way, like, it doesn't really matter. Let me know what made gaming great for you. Jazz, go ahead. Tell me what you loved.
I don't know. I hate everything this year. I'm playing World of Warcraft a lot, but I'm not really happy with the game right now. I'm playing it out of hate. Man, I don't know. I seriously don't know.
You don't know?
Xbox,
you didn't love Capcom's Monster Hunter World?
I did. I suppose that's one thing. Monster Hunter World is definitely up there for this year. But, you know, so far, there's nothing that's really blown me away. I tell you, actually, you know what? The number one thing for me in gaming this year, it was seeing that Cyberpunk presentation, the one they released on YouTube now. That blew my mind so immensely in a big 4K cinema screen. I enjoyed that more than any actual game this year.
Right. I mean, there's a lot.
I don't have a PlayStation, so my I would be saying something completely different probably if I had a PlayStation, but I don't. You know, and I can't. I honestly can't say Xbox delivered this year.
Well, it's not. It's not about. Hold on a second.
That's the thing. I'm only playing on Xbox, and I don't think Xbox delivered this year.
All right, so. I mean, there's a lot of comments here in chat about what made gaming great for them. Gopher says God of War. Let's see. Halo in the Cloud says Sega is the reason he games. Let's see. Raging Cajun says Sea of Thieves and Monster Hunter. Francisco says Monster Hunter. Mr. Good Cat says Celeste. That's a good pick. Celeste is awesome.
I really enjoyed... There's a lot of decent indie games this year.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed Surviving Mars. Really, really enjoyed Moonlighter a lot.
Ice Queen Gaming says Spider-Man and Insomniac. There's a lot of different
God of War,
suggestions. God of War. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, and the video, I mean, that was, the video wasn't like a console war thing. I hate the console war. It was just like, hey, Sony made some great games that I enjoyed playing. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to give them props. That's it. But of course, some people can't think beyond that. You know what I mean? Like, they can't. Yeah, they just can't. But yeah, I don't know. Like, obviously, maybe when Red Dead 2 comes out, someone might say Red Dead 2 was, you know, what made 2018 great, or maybe even Fallout 76 if you're a huge fan. But yeah, I thought it was just an interesting topic. And before we move on to the next one, I got some shout outs for some super chat here. Rump Roast, which says, positivity, that's all that matters. I burned through 7 360s, but Microsoft's customer service is awesome. Even with my one, they bent over backwards to help me. Yeah, and I've had nothing but positive things to say about Xbox customer service. They seem to be definitely the best of the big three, always willing to help and maybe, you know, replace controllers and things of that nature. Overdone says, come join the dark side, ran greatness awaits. I own the PlayStation. I turn it on when it has quality exclusives to play, and PlayStation did not disappoint me this year. However, and I didn't say this in the vid, maybe I should have reiterated it. I don't plan on playing everything on PlayStation. Like, all my gaming, 99% of my gaming takes place on Xbox, and I have not thought about switching and playing everything on PlayStation, mainly because that controller is such trash.
Razer just made a controller that's basically a carbon copy of the Xbox controller for PlayStation.
I know, but I can use the DS4. The Xbox One controller is objectively better, wink wink, objectively, not subjectively. And achievements are just objectively better than trophies. There's no arguments about that. So, yeah, I'll enjoy my PlayStation. Like, I plan on picking up Astrobot Rescue Mission, the PSVR game that supposedly is awesome, to play on my PSVR. Huh? No. Like, the movement stuff in VR, like, the stuff gave me, like, sickness. But I played Moss, and I loved it.
Is Moss on PC, or is it PlayStation?
I think it's PlayStation only. And also shout out to Beaner8127. He says, as an Xbox fan, I love when Nintendo and Sony do really well because it forces Microsoft to step their game up, and I win. Love the channel and never miss a video. Well, thank you for that comment. And I agree with you. Competition is great. Microsoft is only buying these studios, and, you know, they only built the X and doing all these great things because Nintendo and Sony and other companies are on the horizon to do it. If, like, they weren't there to, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like, think about what Microsoft wanted the Xbox One to be. They wanted to take away physical ownership and provide you with a 24-hour check-in, right? Like, and all their weird-ass policies they wanted to do, but consumers weren't having that. And now we have a better, more focused Microsoft that's really about gaming. I mean, Phil's deadly serious when he talks about, like, providing first party content. Like, he really means that. He's, like, going out of his way because he knows content is king, and, you know, he's doing what needs to be done, in my opinion. I don't know. What do you think about all that, Jez? I mean, competition makes everything better, and we win. I mean, I don't, you know, like. Not much more to really say about it.
I don't get these people who want any one company to die, you know. And I get, like, supporting your brand and enjoying it like a sport, you know, and stuff like that. But, you know, why would you ever want one company to dominate? I mean, you've got a situation where, you know, online video is dominated by YouTube, and YouTube makes so many mistakes and anti-consumer things and treats their creators like crap and stuff like that. Am I allowed to say that on your channel? I don't know, but you know, they treat their customers and users like crap because there's no competition. They can get away with it. So, you know, if in a world where there's no competition, you get YouTube and you get, like, really expensive ISP prices in America and stuff like that. You know, in a lot of places where there's only one ISP to choose from, it sucks. So, yeah. Competition is deadly important, and as such, it's important that PlayStation, Xbox, and Nintendo all do well.
See, this is the thing I don't know.
If you're not Google.
This is the thing I don't understand. So Damn God says, Rand couldn't stop playing the PlayStation 4. Just say the man with the million trophies now because you're a Sony fan. But the thing is, I've stopped playing the PlayStation 4. Like, I literally turn it on to play the 3 or 4 exclusives a year. And then I turn it off. 99.999999% of my gaming time is spent on Xbox. As good as Sony's exclusives are, and that was the thing, it's not about the console, it's about the publisher. They make great games, and I play those great games, and then I'm right back on Xbox playing everything else. So I don't understand the comment.
So, because he's a fanboy.
I guess so. Now, Ernie just brought up an interesting question. He says, thoughts on the Switch revision?
Ah, we were going to talk about
that. Yeah, right? We were planning on talk about this. So, came out last night that from the Wall Street Journal in Japan that Nintendo's planning on doing a new Switch for the end of next year. But it doesn't sound like it's going to be like an Xbox One X or PS4 Pro thing. More like a better screen, maybe longer battery life, but not necessarily like a Switch that can suddenly play Red Dead Redemption 2 and all the big AAA games.
And it's probably going to have more tight DRM.
Yeah, so obviously I'm not really in tune in what Nintendo's doing because, quite frankly, probably my worst thought-out decision of the past year or so was buying a Nintendo Switch. I spent $500 on it, and I've played it maybe 3 times. It sits over in the corner behind my TV docked.
When did you sell it?
I don't know, because I've never been the person to buy something and then sell something. Like, I see so many people on Twitter, like, bought an Xbox One X, and then a week later, they're like, Xbox has no games. I'm selling my X, right? And then they sell the X, and all the PlayStation fans are like, yeah, get rid of that trash system. And then a month later, they're like, buying the X again for a cheap price, couldn't pass it up. And then 2 weeks later, they're like, Xbox has no games. Selling my Xbox. It's like so you bought it, you sold it, you bought it again, you're selling it again. Like, why? And number one, then you need to tell people on Twitter, like, you're doing that. Like, who cares? Nobody cares. Nobody literally cares. The only people that care are the Sony fanboys that want, like, people either talking great about PlayStation or talking down on Xbox. Then they'll give them a pat on the back and give them a thumbs up sign or maybe sign the contract or what have you, right? So, but usually I buy something, I don't get rid of it. You know, I still want to play Bayonetta 2 before Bayonetta 3 comes out. But, you know, I bought Mario. I bought Zelda. I have Bayonetta 1 and Bayonetta 2. And you know what? This is the thing. I knew this buying the system because the only other game I'm really interested in besides Bayonetta 3 is honestly Metroid Prime 4. Other than that, I don't care about Smash Brothers. I don't care about Animal Crossing. I don't care about any of their games. Like, they could announce a new Zelda tomorrow, and you know what? I'll be as interested in that as, like, I'm trying to think of a cool analogy here, but I can't. I'm not
moved. Barbie horse
racing. Yeah, like, Barbie horse racing appeals to me just as much as Zelda does. And I'm being truthful when I say that. And when I mean that, because I don't want to play either of those games, even though Jez is trying to convince me to review. What was that game you wanted me to review?
I don't know. It's some horse racing Xbox One game. I can't remember. Like, I can't remember what it was called now, but pre-ordered.
Right. So I bought this system in March, and I've turned it on 3 or 4 times, and that's it. And I can't be arsed to turn it on because, like, I have all the, like, got all the games coming out.
You say can't be arsed.
I can't be arsed. I did a little a little British speak there. You know what I mean?
Oh, nice.
You know, I got Forza Horizon 4 I'm playing through. I got Assassin's Creed Odyssey I'm currently playing. We got Red Dead 2 coming up. We got Hitman. We got Battlefield 5. We got Call of Duty. All these indie games and stuff. And then the games I play on PlayStation, which I haven't got to, like Ratchet and Clank and Horizon Zero Dawn and the Yakuzas and Personas and whatever games come out next year. Oh, my God, next year. You got Devil May Cry. You got Division 2. You got Anthem. You got Crackdown. You got Days Gone. You got Kingdom Hearts 3. You got Resident Evil 2. Like, there's no time to play the Nintendo Switch because the Nintendo Switch doesn't have any games worth playing on it. There, I said it. What are you going to do about it? Hit that like button.
Oh, my God.
I know. Hit that like button. Hashtag Switch. I can't even think of a hashtag. Either way, it's my worst purchase by far. It literally sits in the corner. I just basically burned $500. I just basically threw $500 in the fireplace. But anyways, What do you think about this new Nintendo Switch, Jez?
I think Nintendo do this all the time. They did it with Nintendo 3DS. They do these little revisions here and there, refining their, you know, construction process, improving their margins, stuff like that. It might be something. I mean, the news is presented to us as this is a new console, but really, it's probably no newer than, you know, the incremental updates that Microsoft does to the Xbox line and stuff like that. You know, like, as time goes on, build processes become improved. So, like, without actually having to fully revise a model. So, like, you could say that this new Switch is pretty much akin to, like, the new generation of Xbox controller. It's not like a full-blown revision. It's just like a refinement, maybe.
Yeah. So,
I mean, the issue would be is if it runs games that the original Switch can't, but I can't see that being the case. If it was, can you imagine how madly people would be?
Yeah. Well, I have a couple of things to address. Obviously, I don't really feel that way. Nintendo Switch has great games. If you enjoy them, then you enjoy them. They're just not for me. Right. I don't like, in fact, I gotta like reiterate that is, you know, it just goes to show you that some people just, you know, I was being hyperbolic. I was just, you know, trying to like rant for entertainment's sake, right? Whatever. Either way. And
oh, you're doing the YouTuber thing.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't want people to take me out of context like Boogie. I spent $500 on the Switch, and I know, okay, yeah, it's $300. I bought the Switch, I bought the Pro Controller, I bought Zelda, I bought Mario, and I bought Bayonetta. So $500 for the entire thing. I know Switch is $300, but that's how much I spent on it. You know? And some people just like, you know, when you do these things for entertainment, they're like, they get so upset.
And calm down. Get clicks.
Yeah, and then they're like, but Xbox sucks too, Rand. Like, you're not going to hurt my feelings, bro. Like, people think that stuff really bothers me. Like, they'll be in my comments like, Rand, Xbox has no games. Okay?
The only thing that bothers me as pertains to Microsoft is when people say Windows Phone is dead. And then
Dead. Cry. It's been dead for years.
But Rand, you don't have to say it.
I know. It's one of those things.
It's painful, man. It's painful for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like... It's just one of those things. You can talk how crappy about Xbox is forever, and I don't care. It's a machine that plays video games. I'm not gonna get hurt over it. You know, some people do, some people don't. I don't care, whatever. And you know what? I probably own more games than most. I look, Jez. I have 1,400 games on Xbox. Maybe I should make a video saying Xbox has no games? ? And just display my entire games list.
You've got. Like three times more games than me.
Yeah, yeah. But
nerd. Sorry.
I thought when I first heard this Nintendo Switch rumor, I thought it was going to be a Switch that was a little bit more powerful than the old Switch, right? And mainly because I thought maybe they were trying to make a push to get some of these AAA games on the system. Like, the thing about Nintendo and the thing about the Switch is, like, yeah, it's got all the portability, and yeah, it's an indie darling machine, and, you know, they're like 20 indies come out a week on that system, and you buy it because you want to play the Nintendo exclusives, and they're always good. But it is the one thing it's sorely lacking is it doesn't have Call of Duty, it doesn't have Battlefield, it doesn't have Red Dead 2, it doesn't have Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Well, I guess in Japan it has the streaming version of Red Dead Odyssey, right? But it doesn't have these big AAA games. So, and I did see a statistic from MPD, from Matt Piscatella, that like 65% of Switch owners in the United States have an Xbox One or a PS4. So it's a dual console ownership thing, right? And I thought, okay, so if they're going to introduce a more powerful Switch, maybe with the play of getting some of these AAA games on there, because Nintendo's clearly doesn't have the same issues this gen they did previous ones, where people only bought Nintendo games on the Nintendo console. Like, there are stories of how, like, every single, for the most part, indie game on the Switch sells better than the PlayStation and the Xbox and even the PC version. Now, haters like Jez will tell you that it's because nobody has anything to play on the Switch. So of course people buy it, right? But like, and I use haters like in a jokingly term, a lovingly term, Jez, you know? But like, it's been going on for some time and there's so many games on the Switch. I think Switch had more games so far this year than Xbox did. Now, of course, Xbox has a bigger backlog of games for the last few years, but clearly people are buying Switch games in, you know, a magnitude more than previously. And the only thing missing is those AAA games. Like, I kind of think if Red Dead 2 came out on Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people opted for the Switch version. Or, you know, like take Red Dead 2 on the go. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it presents a use case that Xbox and PlayStation doesn't have. You can play it on the toilet and other places like that. You know, it's like, yeah, 4K, yeah. A lot of people don't have 4K TVs, and also there's a very physical, obvious benefit to having a console that you can take on the go, which is one reason why they're pushing for streaming now. And, you know, and even then, it's a complex proposition to explain to a casual gamer. You know, how do you explain to a casual gamer? Oh, yeah, you stream the whole game over the internet, and it just works. It's like, to a casual gamer, that's like, what? But a Switch is kind of like, oh, that's a Game Boy, you know? Get that. Parents get that. Try and explain to a parent what cloud game streaming is.
Nobody knows.
Well, nobody knows, right there.
But, nobody knows. It's so mysterious.
Try and explain that to a normie, you know? Nintendo presents a solid... You know what a Nintendo console is? They're normie, and I'm talking about normies here, normies and casuals. They know what a Nintendo console is, and a lot of them just like... They don't really see themselves as hardcore console gamers anymore, but the Nintendo is... For those, the 40% that do own just Switches, they've just sort of like, yeah, Nintendo's like this nostalgic thing for me. I was a Nintendo player as a kid, don't have time for real games now. But it's okay to play Nintendo games because it's this fun thing I can play anywhere and fit around my life with its portableness.
Yeah. I don't know. But apparently the new Switch isn't going to really be like that. So, and I don't know. I thought about, maybe I should have waited to buy a Switch to buy that. But then I think to myself, it's like, you didn't really use the Switch now. You probably wouldn't use it then. But I am really interested to play Metroid Prime 4 whenever that comes out. So,
Super chat, by the way.
I did see that. I did see that. And I might as well read it now. Shout out to the friendly neighborhood Blue Shell. This one's directed to you, Jez. He says, Jez, I tried to hold out hope, but it's time to leave my Lumia 950 XL behind. The CBS app is gone.
RIP. Yeah, I left Lumia like, God, over a year ago now.
So, with a new Switch coming next year, Jez, and rumors still persisting that PlayStation is going to reveal the PlayStation 5 next year and potentially launch it at the end of the year. And also, I don't know, like, there's been some talk that maybe Xbox is going to unveil the new Xbox next year. Are we closer to next gen as people think? Like, could it? I mean, I guess the Switch isn't really next gen, but is it potentially next year where you have like three brand new hardware things to talk about from all three companies? I mean,
well, Cryptopsy in chat did mention that there is a new Tegra chip, which is almost 50% more powerful than the one in the Switch, which would certainly boost its gaming chops significantly. God, it's hard to say, isn't it? You know, back in the day, we had these like really, really long console cycles that took like a million years to get upgrades, but now we've got like mid-gen iteration. At least in the case of the Xbox One X, it was a huge leap. I suppose the PS4 Pro was a pretty huge leap too. And then we're already talking about next gen. What are they going to do? 8K? People don't
60
even
60 frames, baby. 60 frames on every game.
Do you know how hard it is to buy a 4K gaming monitor?
They're expensive, and which is why I don't know if you saw the Steam survey, but less than 6% of people play at a resolution higher than 1080p on Steam.
It's so hilarious to me, but going on about how PC Master Race brag about it. But it's like, yeah, people don't want 4K. They want their games running well.
They want the performance.
High frame rate.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, and be careful what you say about PC Master Race. I don't want them invading my channel now and talking smack, right? But, I mean...
Ben hates PC Master Race, he told me.
I just... 4K gaming monitors are expensive, but like most PC, at least like really into PC players that I know of, always talk about performance over resolution, right? And which every, like with the Xbox One X in a similar way, I always choose performance mode over resolution mode.
Well, it's why Microsoft included FreeSync in the Xbox One X, right? Because like if you play Overwatch, like, you know, 144 megahertz display with FreeSync, it makes the game easier to play. You know, it's that smooth. You know, and like, you can't really underestimate how much frame rates help you in a competitive scenario. If someone has better frame rate and, you know, smoother display, it just you'll beat the person that playing at like 30 or 25. You know, FPS with screen tearing, because it's just a more pleasant experience. You know, like I like my pixels, which is why I play at 4K when I'm playing a single player game. I want the image quality to be better. But like, the difference in a competitive game like Call of Duty or Overwatch or, you know, Counter Strike Go and all those sort of PC oriented games can't be understated. But getting a FreeSync monitor for Xbox is not easy. If you want to take advantage of HDR and 4K ever, a 4K HDR monitor with FreeSync basically doesn't exist. I think there's like two that are expensive. I think Philips announced one at Gamescom, if I remember right.
Yeah.
It's like $800.
Diomli Kubre says, I'm watching the stream using my GTX 1070 670K PC. Come on. Yeah, I'm broadcasting the stream using my GTX 1080, my 7700K CPU, you know, like, and it's funny thing, like, all I really use my PC for is to render my videos in Adobe Premiere Pro. Right?
I've got a $3,000 Surface Book, and I play a 13-year-old game on it. And I don't even max that out because, you know, I don't like the fan noise. So I play at a lower resolution because I don't like the fans kicking in. That's the cool thing about PC. You've got the power of control over your experience. But, like, at the same time, that's the benefit of console, is that it just sort of works. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is interesting to know that, like, even like the really hardcore PC people, they're or people that play on PC through Steam, they don't even really consider anything over 1080p. So it is kind of funny seeing the push by Sony and Nintendo, or Sony and Microsoft rather, about 4K, 4K this and 4K that. You know, like, does, and I've, I don't know, like, to me, I've always thought resolution's nice and stuff, but like, I don't know, I was playing on Xbox One when it was like, games were 700p and people were making fun of the Xbox for having lower resolutions. It never bothered me. It didn't impact my enjoyment of every game I played. I just, you know, and now it's like, I don't know, did you see any of the Assassin's Creed Odyssey stuff from like Digital Foundry with like the pottery, like didn't have as many like textures between the Pro?
The PS4 Pro had like worse
textures. Yeah. But like I look at that and nobody really talks about it good because it's dumb, right? Nobody should be talking about that stuff. But then I think about what the beginning of this generation was, and I think back on, you know, Grand Theft Auto 5's Grassgate. I like Digital Foundry was like, well, there's more grass on the PlayStation 4's version. And like that was like a serious thing. Like IGN and all these companies ran articles about
it. It just goes to show, doesn't it? I think like That is not a case. I wouldn't say that's a case of media bias. That is more of a case of media catering to the narrative that people want to read about. You know, there's more PlayStation gamers out there right now, so they get to dictate the narrative. PlayStation, nobody is really interested in whether a game has more blades of grass, I would argue. But when you're like, you know, trying to justify your purchase to yourself, and you're engaged in all these fanboy console wars and stuff like that. An article that bashes Xbox is more compelling to a bigger chunk of the audience.
Dude, there was YouTube channels that got super huge off of just bashing Xbox in the beginning of the gen. It was like a thing everybody did. Everybody was, you know, the media sites.
Yeah, it was a meme. Microsoft created a meme out of themselves, and then people ran with it. People, yeah. Like, at the end of the day, media outlets, they're not biased against Xbox. They just do what gets clicks.
Well, you get that money.
People clicked on that. They clicked on that with impunity, and they don't click on. Xbox One X is more powerful than PS4 Pro with the same impunity. Maybe because, like, it's more obvious that it is better, or it's done and done, and it's like, yeah, it's better.
I also think it's as more to do with not that many people own a Pro or an X. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they don't want to read about, like, a system that they don't own. Like, yeah, the X is better than the Pro. Of course it is. But most people still game on a regular PlayStation and a regular Xbox. But, like, nobody really talks about that anymore, right? Like Assassin's Creed Odyssey can reach native 4K sometimes on the X and less on the Pro. But then nobody really talks about, like, well, on the regular Xbox One, it, like, reaches, like, 790p and, like, 1080p on, like, the PS4. People just focus on the more high-end models. But, like, the regular gamer is the one that, I mean, they're not playing on an X or Pro. They're playing on a regular system. Maybe that's why it doesn't really get that many. And honestly, the only people that really care are, like, the super fanboys. You know what I mean? Like, the super really into that stuff. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about Xbox versus Google now. Google.
Big fight.
We need to have a sit down with Jez and understand why he hates Google so much. You know,
I just don't like him. This is a sports team thing, right? Google ain't my team, man. I resent the fact that I have to use Android because I don't like giving Google my data. I don't trust Google with my data. I don't trust them with my information. I don't like the fact they read my emails to target ads at me. You know, I don't like any of that stuff. And Microsoft does it too. So it's a bit stupid of me to even be like that. But the thing is, you can turn it off on Windows. You can click a button that says, don't collect ad relevant data about me. Google doesn't offer that. Or at least if they do, they make it so obscure that I can't find it. So that's one reason that Google bothers me. Another reason Google bothers me is, you know, the general avarice they've shown to completing platforms, using their monopoly of search to squeeze out, to downrank SEO for the iPhone, to downrank SEO for Windows products, you know, to promote their own stuff. I just think they're a monopoly that's completely out of control, and I don't like that. And Google have a responsibility to use their monopoly for good and not evil. They even had that in their mission statement, which they famously removed. So that's the long and short of why I don't like Google. But really, it's more like there's no real reason why I don't like Google. I'm just being mean.
You don't like Google because Google destroyed the Windows Phone.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
I'm bitter for that. That's the real reason.
That's right.
But the thing is, Google is a company that, well, I truly genuinely believe Phil Spencer with Xbox, I mean, I wouldn't have said this about Don Matrick in a million years, but I truly believe that Phil Spencer is out there to create fun experiences for people to just relax after work, play some games, have fun, and then make some money on it. I truly believe that that's the goal, the current goal with Xbox, is to just make something nice in a world that is comprised almost entirely of shit. But Google, I know they love being an evil company. So I don't, when I see Google getting into gaming, I don't see them getting into gaming for any reason other than let's see how much juice we can milk out of this stuff for our nefarious evil deeds. And so Larry Page can have a new yacht. That's the only real thing. That's my takeaway when I see Google getting into gaming, right? I don't see a company that wants to do something for the betterment of the gaming industry. I just see a company that wants to kill Windows at like so desperately wants to kill Windows that they're willing to get into gaming to do it. And that's really what this is about here. Google is what I feel Google's plan is with the streaming stuff.
Well,
it's not some, sorry, go on.
Well, let's explain it first before we get into that in case people don't know. Okay, so earlier this week, Google announced Google Project Stream, and they were testing it out in beta format, and they partnered up with Ubisoft, and you'll be able to play Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And all you need is a PC or laptop with a 25 megabyte per second internet connection, and you can be able to stream Assassin's Creed Odyssey in your Google Chrome browser, that you have on your PC. And there's been rumors forever that Google's gearing up to an entry into the console race. There is Project Yeti, which was supposedly some sort of actual console they were making. And then here's this Project Stream, which is going to be some streaming thing. So, you know, they hired Phil Harrison, who used to work at PlayStation and Xbox, to kind of like head that division. So seems like Google is really getting serious about gaming, at least console gaming, AAA gaming. You know, they have Android, so they're like already at the forefront of like mobile gaming, along with Apple. But this could have really big consequences for gaming in general, and which Jez is going to explain, which is right where I cut him off. So continue, Jez.
Okay, well, I've been saying on this podcast pretty much for over a year that the big fight for Microsoft and why they were pushing cloud so hard, it was never about PlayStation ever. It was all about Google and Amazon to some degree, because Amazon's going to have some kind of play like this waiting in the wings too. Amazon has infinite money. Google has infinite money. You know, who knows? Maybe even Apple is skirting around getting into this. But seriously, these are the companies with the big mega bucks who could really upend everything we know about gaming. And ultimately, it comes down to finding a new audience, because the console audience is pretty much saturated. They're at a point now where all gamers, all core gamers are accounted for. You either play on Xbox, PlayStation, PC, you are the core gamer, and they've reached the point where they are dissatisfied with the speed of growth there, I guess. As such, one of the things publishers tried to do at the start of this gen to recoup costs was to destroy the used games market by having this DRM system for all games. There was a huge backlash against that, which killed that initiative off. So now they're looking beyond that to things like microtransactions and now game streaming. And given the rise of Netflix, game streaming was ultimately inevitable anyway. But the problem for Microsoft is that Google is the only company, other than maybe Amazon, who has the cloud clout to compete with them with this sort of technology. And also, not only does Google have the technology and the servers to deliver this stuff, they've also got Android. They've also got YouTube. They've also got Chromebooks, which are increasingly popular and a really cheap way to get computers into people's hands. Like, you can get a decent Chromebook for like $200, maybe even less. And a lot of kids these days, growing up at school, they're growing up with Chromebooks and Android. They ain't growing up with Windows. So the big gap in the market for Chromebook is that Chromebook has no games, and the games it does have are pay-to-win mobile garbage.
Yep.
So the way that Google can fix that and get more credible games, the only way they can do this is by streaming PC games, ironically enough. So like presumably, what they're going to do is they're going to have a big, massive server farm running the PC versions of popular games, starting with Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Ubisoft just announced a partnership with Google to do exactly this. And they will stream the games to Right now, Project Stream says it's targeting browsers on laptops and desktops. Curiously, not Chromebooks or Android. Now, I think the reason they've done that is for optics, and they want to be seen as a legitimate company first, you know, and stuff like that. That's my personal opinion. They're going to ramp this up slowly, prove that it works with the hardcore crowd, and then filter that influence down to normal people. And then they've got Android. They can put it front and center on, you know, millions of devices overnight through the Google Play Store, and not all Android phones run the Google Play Store, especially in Asia.
Yeah, that's true.
In China. So, you know, Google's reach is limited to Western audiences pretty much at this point. But as such, Google manages to make this work, and you can get like AAA games on a $200 Chromebook. That's going to present a big problem for Microsoft. You know.
Well, not just Microsoft, but that's got to also eat into the bottom line for Sony, because everybody knows that Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo's businesses are built on the fact that they sell other people's games and then take 30%, right? They take 30% of a sale. That's why like having a user base is important, because technically, you know, the bigger the user base, the more of those third-party games you sell, so you get more money, right? That's why you want, obviously, more consoles sold than your competitor. So if Google can come in with a cheap option, and I mean really cheap, whether it's streaming through the PC or having some sort of like, you know, Google Chrome stick or whatever you want to call it, right, where then they somehow can persuade or make people shift their purchases from PlayStation and Microsoft to this Google thing, then that will have negative impacts on, you know, PlayStation and Xbox's bottom line, in my opinion. Could be wrong, because quite frankly, it needs to work, right? It needs to be cheap, because it's like I said with the Project Scarlet streaming device from Xbox. Like, number one, it has to work for people to even care. And number two, it has to be cheap. You can't have it kind of priced anywhere close to what a normal console would cost, because the cheaper you pay for something, the less you expect out of it. It's just, you know, human nature. You pay a dollar for a steak at the dollar store, you expect to get sick. But you spend, you know, $100 on a steak, you expect it to be damn good. So it's got to be cheap, and it has to work.
And I think, like, a lot of the people are missing the point here as well. That they are not targeting you guys with this stuff. They are not targeting existing core gamers who already have established libraries with this stuff. They aren't. Who they are targeting with this stuff is the next 500 million gamers. You know, the people who think that having a mobile phone is enough. The people who are happy just to play Candy Crush. They're trying to decrease the barriers to getting those people on their games. They're trying to decrease those barriers. And it's all about getting new gamers. The billions of people out there who don't game on anything other than Candy Crush. Like, and there's a lot of people, you know. The industry is a huge industry, you know. And when they talk about the games industry, they are talking about, you know, all those crappy mobile pay-to-win garbage games that we all hate. They are talking about those games. And when you think about consoles is like 30% of that whole industry. So you've got Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony fighting over 30% of the wider business. Ubisoft and EA want the whole piece of the pie. You know, they don't want to just have three companies scrapping over the 30%. They want a presence on Android. They want a presence on iPhone. Well, it's mostly Android, really. Because, like, outside of the US, iPhone isn't that popular. And especially the newer iterations of it. So it's complicated, and I'm not saying that. I'm by no means saying that Google wants to, or Google can, or even Microsoft or Sony. I'm not saying they want to eliminate their local hardware, and they don't want to kill off PCs, and they don't want to kill off consoles, because that is an established healthy business. This is all about going for the next hundreds and hundreds of millions. And the problem is, if streaming becomes like the way that those casual normies want to play games, that becomes the de facto way that people digest games, then we could end up in a situation where, you know, the industry moves to cater to them rather than catering to, you know, core gamers who appreciate the art of gaming, you know, and take it more seriously and stuff like that. So I don't think Google cares about us. Google's all about making money, and they're not a gaming company. And if they did care about quality games, they would have done something with Android to make it a quality gaming platform and not pay-to-win predatory evil platform, which has pretty much ruined the whole business. I don't trust Google with this stuff, and neither should you. And I don't know where I was going with this speech, but it's ultimately just like a case of that's where this disruption is going to come from, you know. And it's a case of how is this going to be implemented? Is it just going to be for free as part of Xbox Live Gold? Are there going to be devices dedicated to handheld Xbox gaming? You know, it's all this stuff that I'm just worried that, like, I'm just concerned that Microsoft will think, like, if we build it, that will come, you know. Whereas, right. like, Google can literally just slap a huge banner on Google Play and say, oh, by the way, you can get AAA games on your phone now. Here's how to do it. And it's all about decreasing those barriers to access, you know. The simple fact... Sorry, Ren. One more thing. The simple fact that Google has the ability to set the defaults on Google Play phones puts Xbox at a massive disadvantage on mobile. You know, so... Right.
Well, okay, so there's a few questions, obviously, and even I kind of was thinking this when you were talking. He's like, so Arsenic Steel says, so Google will get 1 billion new gamers, and Sony, Nintendo, Microsoft will keep their 200 million. Okay, question mark. Right, like, if you're saying Google's targeting the next group of gamers that are growing up, so they're new gamers, will Sony and Microsoft, I mean, then that wouldn't necessarily
I was talking about the most extreme case scenario there. And also, it's not like Microsoft isn't going to compete here, or Sony.
Well, they are. Yeah. I mean, they have their streaming platform ready to go. They have Game Pass. They're buying the, you know, the studios to put Game Pass in, with, you know, because exclusive content. Because that's the other, like...
That's the thing, too. What platform are we using right now to have this podcast?
We are using, yes.
It's a Google platform.
But
Sorry.
I was just going to say, my issue with all this, not that I don't believe Google's going to get in and try to go big. They do whatever they have. But sometimes it doesn't work out, and a lot of Google's experiments end up being failures, right?
Yeah, they do.
Right. So, and I understand, like, everybody wants streaming. The console manufacturers want it so they don't have to R&D hardware. You know, the game studios want it because essentially it's just you're renting a game from them and not owning it. It's just they want that to be the future, not necessarily saying that the future is right now because it's internet's not that good and we probably are 10 years out. But here's the thing, like Xbox, Nintendo, and Sony, they have exclusive experiences exclusive to the platform they're on. Like, if you want to play God of War and Uncharted, you have to get a PlayStation. Sure, if you want to play Halo and Gears of War, you can play it on your PC, but for the most part, it's also on Xbox and Nintendo. Well, you want to play the Mario and Zelda, you got to get it there. As far as we know, Google hasn't bought any company, right? Like, so clearly, whenever they do come in, it can't be a play with exclusive content. So it's got to be a play on playing the games that you normally play on your Xbox and PlayStation and Nintendo, but being able to play it in a cheap manner. Because like, when I think about it, is like, you think about the transition to next gen period. PlayStation 5, Xbox 2. You know how hard it is going to be to convince a PlayStation gamer to switch to Xbox, to give up their thousands of potential purchases of their digital content that they have that is more than likely going to be backwards compatible with the PS5, just as it would with an Xbox gamer who has been gaming on the ecosystem since the original Xbox, who has all these purchases and all these friends. Like, it's going to be incredibly hard for any of these companies to steal somebody, because we're in that era now. We weren't really in the era so much with the 360 PS3. We were starting to actually get to that point, but now we're fully at that point, right? people live online with this stuff. Their purchases are tied to their account. It's going to be incredibly hard for these companies to steal anybody. So then I'm sitting there wondering, if Google came and was like, listen, we can, you can stream Assassin's Creed, the next Assassin's Creed and the next Call of Duty on your PC, and all you need is your PC, which you already own, is who's that really going? It's definitely, I don't think, going to appeal to the hardcore fans of PlayStation and Xbox and Nintendo. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so who's that going to appeal to? Are we talking is going to appeal to the uber casuals, the ones who don't care? But then again, maybe those, I don't know, like, I can see the danger. I can see the competition. I can see how it can affect everything. But at the same time, I also see the pitfalls, because Google's not going to be offering anything compelling other than like, hey, this is a super cheap way to play stuff. But at the same time, you know, mobile gamers aren't the same as console gamers. You know what I mean? Like, this is the other issue I kind of have with Microsoft's foray into mobile gaming, so to speak, and like trying and doing the streaming thing, is they want to reach 2 billion gamers, right? But like, I don't really think those gamers who play on mobile and outside of console are interested in Gears of War 5 or anything that Microsoft or Sony ever are going to produce. There's a reason they play on the phones, and there's a reason they play on the tablets and play those type of games, because those like those games. If like suddenly those people are now like, hey, there's a Gears Pop game on my phone from Microsoft, they're not going to give a shit. So like, I also see like how this whole thing could just be a complete and utter failure. And with all these companies chasing streaming to go after these people who more than likely don't give a shit about the product that you already have because they don't own it. And just, you know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe I'm not making any sense, you know?
No, I mean, it's certainly, I'm by no means saying to certainty that Google's streaming stuff will succeed. No, I mean, look at Google Plus, you know, that Google Plus, they put it straight on top of their, you know, search engine, pretty much the face of the internet, and they still managed to make it fail, which is, you know, you could say that's pretty staggeringly impressive. But Microsoft, my only point is Microsoft can't afford to be complacent, because they could nail it. And the fact that they're taking this softly approach kind of speaks to me of, it reminded me of the Chrome web browser, right? The Chrome web browser, you know, when it first launched, it wasn't that great. But they sort of took a softly approach to it. They prioritized features that targeted like power users and stuff like that. And then you eventually got into a system where Chrome is now a scenario where Chrome is now the biggest browser in the world. Even though like Microsoft sets the default browser on your computer, people have gotten used to switching to Chrome because they just made it better. They made a better product. Because Microsoft were complacent and just assumed that they would always be the best, and it didn't matter, and they didn't have to try. And they did the same with Skype, and now you've got Discord, which is better than Skype. And they did the same with a load of other products, which are now like Cortana. Cortana was years ahead of Alexa. Now look, you know, Cortana is basically dead.
Yeah.
And this is the Microsoft that I fear when I think about Google getting into this space. It's the Microsoft of, oh, we don't need to worry about this. We're so huge. We don't need to worry about Chromebooks. We don't need to worry about Chromebooks because Windows is such a huge monopoly, and Chromebooks are, you know, going up every year. You know, I'm by no means suggesting that Windows is going to die anytime soon because it's got like 85% market share on PC. But you know, people laughed at Chromebook before. I know it's a legitimate contender, especially in schools and other places, which, you know, people basically only need a web browser, and the web browser everyone uses is Chrome. So
that is true.
It's the complacency that Microsoft can't afford to have here, because yeah, it could just be another Google Plus. It could be a load of crap. People could just skip over it, and people, you know, it could just be a complete failure. But it could also be the thing that changes everything for gaming. And if it is, Microsoft and Sony, I guess, to the same degree, they can't afford to be complacent and just let Google go ahead with it and just do whatever they want. Because Google have shown a staggering ability for failure too you know, Google Plus is this big, huge joke. I'm pretty much, I think something like 85% of Google's business is ads.
Yeah,
which isn't very diverse as a business.
I mean, hell, they've never made money on YouTube.
No, they've never made money on YouTube, and they don't make that much money on Google Play either, from what I've heard. Like they barely have full control of Android. You know, it's like,
but they control advertising.
Yeah.
So you know,
they make all their money from ads, whereas Microsoft has this really diverse portfolio of goods and services. And if any one business at Microsoft fails, it doesn't matter because they've got like 10 other businesses which still pull in really sick profits.
It's definitely going to be interesting to see, like, if the casuals jump on this. If the casuals are truly that price sensitive, then if that's the case and they don't really care, then yeah, maybe this takes off and maybe all the casuals jump with Google and do this. I mean, I know Microsoft is obviously thinking that way because, you know, we talked about the Xbox Scarlett streaming device. You know, like, yeah. What if you could start a generation out not only with a really high-priced premium machine, but also, like, a device that was $150? Because normally most generations start out really expensive and the costs come down over time. And as costs come down, the more casual consumer enters the market. But what if you were at mass market price immediately? How would that change the business model? How would that change the business period? It's really something interesting to think about. And shout out to Cake Batter for the super chat. He says, if you can play AAA 1080p 60 games on any device with a Chrome browser by logging into your account, would be a game changer. Yeah, the potential's all there for it. It really is. Like, I'm just concerned. I just think, like, if you're not interested in the type of gaming that we have right now, like the Assassin's Creeds and the Gears of Wars and Uncharted's, and gaming's been around like this for years and years and years. If you haven't really been interested in that type of gaming, I don't really see how that would suddenly turn you into a... Like, let me give you an example really quick. My sisters, my mom play on their phones. And they play like Candy Crush or whatever, right? So they're one of the 2 billion game. By their definition, they're a gamer, right? They're included in all the statistics because they play games and they might even buy some stupid shit on there, right? So when like Xbox talks about reaching 2 billion gamers or 4 billion gamers or whatever, like they would be included. But like to me, that type of person is never going to go for what Xbox is offering in any universe. You know, it's just, yeah, they're a statistic. They're part of the 4 billion. But like, I don't know. Like, I almost truly feel like the AAA video game market that we have right now is 200 million people. And that's it. Like trying to get those people who play mobile, they're not interested in what we have. They're interested in something else, and just giving them easier access to Gears of War and Uncharted isn't going to make them want to play those games. You know? I don't know.
I think you're totally right that that could be the case. That maybe those people just aren't predisposed to console gaming. And I've certainly seen this with my girlfriend because I've struggled to try and get her into gaming. She has all the access to all the same games I do. She's tried loads of games out, and for some reason, nothing sticks, and it's fine. It just means she's not into the hobby. And I think, like, you're right. Just simply improving access isn't going to create 2 billion gamers, core gamers, overnight. You know, it isn't. But the problem is, you can't, Google lurking in the background, you can't have that complacency about it. You just be irresponsible as the person running Xbox to presume that is the case, that Google will just fail. And that's why they're investing so much in this technology, in this platform. But the problem for me is that Microsoft as an entity has neglected and become complacent about some of their products, which could have benefited their other products. So, like, you've got Microsoft. Microsoft purchased Mixer, right? Because yeah, they decided Mixer's less about competing with Twitch, and it's more about having a sort of complete gaming ecosystem, because you're going to have Google with a streaming platform in YouTube Gaming, and you're going to have their Project Stream or whatever they're going to call it.
And also, don't forget that it's good for the MAUs.
And it's good for them MAUs, yes. And also, you've got, like, We've got Amazon own Twitch, and you know Amazon's working on cloud streaming too. They've got the server infrastructure to do it. They've been poaching staff from Xbox for years.
Yeah, they have.
Amazon is 100% working on the same thing. They're going to have game streaming too. So, with that in mind, you have to notice that Microsoft's ecosystem business is weak. You know, Mixer's not as popular as YouTube or Twitch. And, you know, you've got Discord too. I mean, I've read all this stuff's in my article, but you've got like Discord is an independent company, which is like the friends list of gamers internet now. So like if Amazon or Google snaps up Discord, that's going to put a huge dent in Microsoft too, because, you know, Xbox Live messaging and party chat just isn't that great and isn't that convenient. And Microsoft have let Skype become terrible over the years. And, you know, it's not. And also they let their mobile platform completely collapse. So like, it's a lot of these factors that make me think, like, if Microsoft had been more cohesive from the outset about planning for this cloud-based future, then we wouldn't be in a situation where it's such a big risk. But I really do feel like Google's potential involvement here is a risk, and I don't think Microsoft can be afford to just assume that it's going to flop. Like,
so you're saying they have to be proactive and go after the audience to try to get there first before Google does. Because if Google does succeed, well, maybe they're bigger than Microsoft here. Maybe Xbox becomes irrelevant, and Google, you know, like, yeah. I mean, of course, it's a worry, and I also kind of wonder, like, with Xbox's goal of reaching 2 billion gamers and everything kind of being made to go towards that. I also worry about a little bit about, like, not necessarily the immediate future, but like, what if in 10 years the next Xbox is worse off than the current one? Like, with Phil being at the head of the table, you know, and they're like, now there's expectations about the company and what they're doing. Like, what if they don't meet any of their expectations? What if they realize 15 years from now, they're like, yeah, there's no need for Xbox because it didn't pull its own weight. You know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe Xbox, like, maybe they hit it out of the park and they get there first and everything's great. I don't know. But I do think, like, there is some sort of disruption coming. Like, Google's not going to play around. They're getting in. They're spending the money. Like, they're serious about it. You know, the other companies should worry about it. Sony should be worried about them siphoning away casuals who buy their third-party games. Like, you know, Sony's doubling down on their first-party exclusives to be the like, hey, you want a PlayStation? You want to play these games? You better get here. You know, you better play here. Like, you know, so I don't know. The war is coming, right? And then there's Amazon, like you said, looming too. So, but that was good talk. Good discussion, Jez. We got to understand why you truly hate Google like they're a real person. So
I hate Google because they blocked the YouTube app on Windows Phone.
Yeah. But hit us up with some questions before we get out of here. I just want to really quick thank everybody for hanging out with us. We had like 380 people. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you show us some love and give us a like or a dislike if you don't like, you know, Jez's irrational hate of Google or my dislike of Nintendo. You know, share it out on Twitter. All that good stuff. But yeah, hit us up with some questions and, you know, we'll answer them. Let's go. Oh, yes. So Chief Nagel, the 8th, says Harry Potter leak, RPG leak. I actually wanted to talk about that, but I totally forgot and we're getting close to 2 hours. But Jez, you obviously have something to talk to say about it, so do I. So what do you think?
Well, first of all, there was like some confusion about who was developing it. Some people were thinking that Rocksteady was developing, but it's Avalanche Software, right?
Not to be confused with Avalanche Studios, who make Mad Max and Just Cause. Yeah,
this is Avalanche Software, who made Disney
Infinity. Disney Infinity, Cars 3, Driven to Win. Yeah.
Ooh. Okay, so given their pedigree, I wouldn't have been that interested in it. But it actually, from the leaked stuff, it actually looked like pretty good. I quite like Harry Potter personally.
Me too.
I like the movies. I didn't read the books because I don't read, because I'm ignorant. But I like I feel like the universe has all this lore potential that's untapped right now. And I think like a game, an official, because it was like officially licensed game with like, you know, the Wizarding World branding and all that sort of stuff. I think like an officially licensed game that is set and is canon with the lore, I think that could be amazing. So like, I'm personally all for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I thought the leak stuff looked really cool. I've actually played a ton of the Harry Potter games, like even the Kinect games and stuff, and most of them pretty bad. The studio that is making it does kind of not fill me with the biggest confidence, as they don't really seem like they make great games. But just that snippet of what they've shown there seemed like it'd be really cool. I think they said 2020, or at least people in the know said 2020, and it's a next gen title of some kind. Warner Brothers, obviously they have the license, looks pretty cool.
Who's your favorite character in Harry Potter?
Honestly, Harry Potter.
Really?
I mean, he's the main character. You get to, you know, you go through all the books with him, you know what he's thinking. Like, I don't know, like, if you ask me, like, the Wheel of Time, where Wheel of Time is literally a bunch of different characters' perspectives, or Game of Thrones for that matter, where you're in the head of, you know, Tyrion and Tywin and you know, all the different characters, it's harder to pick. But like Harry Potter, like the books are about Harry Potter. You don't really know much about any of the other side characters. But
yeah, that's the thing, like, I've only seen the movies, so like for me, my perspective on it is slightly different.
Well, see, I read the books first, so I was kind of predisposed to Perry. But all right, so
my girlfriend is a massive Harry Potter fan.
Mr. Righteous Fist says, how are you liking Hollow Knight? I decided to play Assassin's Creed Odyssey first, but Hollow Knight is the next game I'm going to get to, so expect a video, I don't know, like sometime next week, maybe the week after. And then after Hollow Knight, I plan on playing Astrobot Rescue Mission on PSVR. So that's kind of like what I plan on playing in the meantime.
Tell me about Hollow Knight briefly, because I've got a key for it, but I haven't.
So Hollow Knight is a Metroidvania game. It's currently a 90 on Metacritic.
And I'm off. I'm downloading it.
Yeah, it's
Metroidvania is the magic word, baby.
Yeah, it's like a lot of people have said it's the best Metroidvania game, even better than like Metroid and Castlevania. There's a lot of really high praise for it. It's a long game. Playthrough, just beating it takes 25 to 30 hours. But apparently the art's incredible. I haven't really played much of it. I just know a lot of people think it's a masterpiece. So I'll be playing that soon. Werebox wants to know if we've heard anything about Microsoft buying Playdead, who made Limbo and Inside.
Ooh.
I mean,
that'd be weird.
I think that would be a good purchase because they make great games. But
I often think, like, I mean, the whole idea of an episodic game has kind of become...
Well, they don't make episodic games.
Yeah, I know. But the whole idea of an episodic game has become controversial with the Telltale closing. However, can you imagine a Game Pass game that was like Limbo and Inside that was episodic, and like they released like new levels all the time and the game just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger?
Mm-hmm. That'd be cool, but I don't know, with the failure of Telltale Games, and I don't know if you've seen it, but some people are really concerned with Life is Strange 2, because apparently the concurrent users on Steam are like way less than like Life is Strange Before the Storm. I don't know, maybe it's possible that the episodic stuff doesn't sell as well as it used to, or people are over that type of thing. I mean, look at Hitman. Like, Hitman was very episodic. But a lot of people said, you know what, I don't want one episode of Hitman and then check back 2 months later. I want all of Hitman. And a lot of people didn't play it. So much so that Square Enix, like, basically dumped the carcass of IO out the door. They didn't want them anymore. And sure, they signed a marketing deal or a publishing deal with Warner Brothers. But I have this, like, huge fear that Hitman 2 is going to fail. Because it's coming out after Red Dead, which is going to suck up all everybody's money and time. And it comes out right around Battlefield 5 and Fallout 76. And they're going to be like, but we made the game full and it doesn't matter. Like, you kind of doing the episodic thing. I don't know if it works, man. I think it worked when it was a novel concept. in the beginning, I think people are over that. I think people just want like the entirety of the game right away, you know?
Yep. But that's the thing, though. Like, these episodic games could add value to Game Pass.
No, of course they could. And maybe they will, like, 4 years from now, when Game Pass is more viable. Sure. Yeah, I agree with you. Game Pass would be cool for that stuff. So, what else we got here? Let's see here. Splinter Cell at XO, says Z Black Rider.
Oh, wouldn't that make you happy, right?
Yeah, I mean, it would be a huge win. I'd be like, XO18 is the best event of all time. And Ubisoft has mentioned Splinter Cell recently, and they said, like, it's not a matter of, like, wanting to. It's a matter of resources and manpower, because other studios are on other things, and they may not have... I had heard...
The fact that they put a... There's an Easter egg for Splinter Cell in... Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and honestly, it's not much of an Easter egg. It's right there in your face. It's kind of like, by the way, Splinter Cell, look here. There, Splinter Cell things here, right here. Right.
So
it wasn't an Easter egg. It was a tease.
I've said this before, years ago. I know somebody who's actually played Splinter Cell, right? The new Splinter Cell, but this was years ago, right?
Dun, dun, dun.
So the thing, and people don't believe me, but I don't lie about this stuff. So I know somebody who's played the new Splinter Cell. But the thing is, I think that version of that game got canceled.
No!
Yeah. So I think they canceled whatever, or maybe they just stopped working on it and then we'll continue, you know, bring it back later. But I think they just did other things. So like here are things. Like, sometimes I hear things from people, some things people tell me stuff, you know, like, for instance, about this last E3. Like, I knew Cyberpunk was going to be a Microsoft show, and I knew it was closing the show. Like, I knew it for 100% fact months before anybody was saying anything about Cyberpunk. I knew it. I knew some of the other third-party games there, right? So sometimes people tell me things, and I know these things, and it's, like, not much a surprise when it actually happens. You know, and joke around about it in prediction videos and shit, right? So every year I looked forward to Splinter Cell from Ubisoft because I know somebody who's literally played the game, and every year I get disappointed, and the only like explanation I have is like the game got canceled or put on hiatus for a while. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
I think they discovered that you are a Splinter Cell fan and canceled it despite you because you said nasty things about them on a podcast.
Yeah. But anyways, let's see what other questions we got here. We got one from JD Gamer. He says, what studio out of these would you most want to see Microsoft buy? Moon Studios, Studio MDHR, Playdead, Armature, Level 5, Mistwalker, Sega, Annapurna Interactive. Well, Annapurna Interactive is a publisher, so we kind of get rid of that because they don't really make games. But out of those, if I had to pick one out of those, I'd pick... This is a tough choice. It comes down to Moon Studios and Play Dead, because Play Dead has made two of my favorite games, Inside and Limbo. They make incredible experiences. Moon Studios also made Ori, and they're making the next Ori, and they know what they're doing. The other ones I don't really care. Armature, like, they made
Recoil. The only logical choice here is Sega.
Sega? They haven't made anything good in years.
They've got so much juicy IP that they could make good.
Yeah, but the thing about, but if you buy, would you buy the publisher and all the developers to develop all the games, or then you need to find the developers to make the games? I don't know.
Screw it, man. Just put all Microsoft Studios on a next-gen Sonic and make it great again.
Yeah.
Make
Sonic great again. Michael Monkey Punch wants to know, Ryan, what do you think Microsoft is going to announce at XO, in your opinion? Well, me and Jazz will definitely have a predictions show about that, and I'll probably even make a video about that. I think you're going to see a new studio acquisition. I think you're going to see the reveal of Crackdown 3 multiplayer. And I think they're going to announce Fable.
You think they're going to announce Fable? Damn. Mm-hmm. Damn.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they actually announced the next Xbox. I know, like, I'm kind of hyping this up, but I see no reason to actually bring back XO if you're not going to actually do it properly. Might as well not even bother doing it.
I agree. I think, like, there's at the very least going to be some kind of shadowy tease or something like that.
Yeah.
I also think Age of Empires information, personally. I know a lot of people don't really care that much about that, but I love Age of Empires and I want to see that come back to life. Do you think it's going to be as big and grand as E3?
It's a 2-hour show, and I swear, like, I don't have any expectations for Inside Xbox. I think it's going to be, you know, like, the show's the show, but I don't know. I actually literally have expectations for this. It's 2 hours long. I'm not sure it'll be like E3, but I expect there to be just like nonstop, maybe not nonstop, but new announcements, new information. I mean, they talked about it when Phil announced it, like, you're gonna have news to share, you know, third party is gonna be there and first party is gonna be leading the charge. Like, that's a direct quote from Phil, you know, like, so yeah, like, well, obviously I'll sit down and think about it more in the future, but I'm expecting good stuff from it. You know, I don't know, but that's just me. See any other questions here that I can see? JD Gamer wants to know, wouldn't it be great if Microsoft brought back some old RPG classics like Granada, Lunar, Shining Force, Phantasy Star, Panzer Dragoon Saga, remaster these and remake? I've played none of those. So, no. I think I played Panzer Dragoon, which is cool, but I think they kind of did a pseudo spiritual remake in that with Crimson Dragon. But yeah, those don't really, like, I read those and they're just words on the screen. I have no idea what any Phantasy Star. Sure, I know what that is, but I didn't play it.
Yeah, I haven't played any of those either, except Grandia briefly, and that game was too grindy for me. On that note, I do miss classic JRPGs, like the turn-based stuff. I mean, I don't know why there isn't a market for that now. It just seems weird to me.
Well, I mean, Octopath Traveler just came out and sold incredibly well, and that's kind of like one of those old-school RPGs, turn-based things.
Yeah, but it's on Switch.
And it's on Switch. But nobody buys games on Switch, Jazz. That's what you always said, until every game gets bought on Switch.
But it's like you have to buy it, because Switch has no games.
Ah, okay.
It's an anomaly.
All right. And with that, we are going to end the show. Thank you guys for all your questions. We appreciate it. And Jez, before we get out of here, any things going on at Windows Central? Any articles people should be on the lookout for?
Well, if you're interested in the whole streaming thing, and, you know, I wrote an article about that, which is up on Windows Central now, you can check out my thoughts on why I think Microsoft can't afford to be complacent with Google. Other than that, we are possibly working on a big game preview. One.
Jeez, I wonder what game's coming out soon. Huh.
Yeah. It's not Red Dead.
No.
Sadly. But it's a pretty cool game. I don't know. There's nothing major happening right now. It's mostly just Christmas stuff. Helping people figure out how to spend their money.
That's right. As for me, I'll be dropping videos as normal on the channel whenever I kind of feel like I have something to say or some news pops up. So if you want to always be notified, hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell. But if you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you give it a thumbs up and share it out on Twitter. Thank you guys for watching live, and thank you guys for, you know, listening to this later if you're on Google or iTunes. Sorry about the delay in the last two episodes. Hopefully this episode will be up much sooner than those. So thanks, guys, and we'll see you next week. Later.
Bye.